Happy January. I'm back in LA for the weekend, which is nice. The sun is shining, it's springtime, and I might be able to find time to even ride my bike. It's my unconventional life. Albacore. I went to the woods because I wanted to live deliberately, to front only the essential facts of life, and see if I could not learn what it had to teach, and not when I came to die, discover that I had not lived. My name is Nigel McGuinness, and this is My Unconventional Life. It's a podcast, it's a journal, and in a way it is kind of a personal ad. But most of all, it's about navigating the treacherous waters of love, sex, and relationships in 2017. Sponsored by absolutely no one. Every week, I detail my own journey and discuss my own untraditional views and aspirations in that world. Whatever the topic, whoever the guest, it all comes back to one question. How do we best find and express love in 2017? So, I'm down to about 100 listeners each week, which is still 100 listeners, but it does beg some questions. Is this of any worth if it only helps one person? Or I guess on the other side of the question is, how much does it hurt to do it anyway? The time and effort. And being so emotionally open in a public forum. It even begs the question, does my life matter? And what's truly important in my life? I've been reading more of Derren Brown's book, but I've yet to find real concrete inspiration in it. As far as the podcast goes, I don't feel I can talk completely openly on it anymore. But that doesn't mean it doesn't have any value either, or that learning to be a little more judicious with my feelings isn't a bad idea either. I'm not sure. I've always been extremely open in my life and never wanted to hide anything. I wanted to live a life of openness and pride. And that's hard when other people's lives are affected by it, though. Perhaps. I am keeping a private record of my feelings in case we can get to a stage in the future where we feel secure enough to talk about the events and feelings of this time period more publicly. I remember when I was in my early teens and just started to really put some thought into what I was going to do with my life. And I remember writing in my diary one night, "Most people wander through life unaware why they go through it at all." I think to some extent, my mental state now is tied to Aries. She's entering her third trimester now and it's really starting to show and endure a lot more of the physical stresses of being pregnant as well as the previous emotional ones. As time's gone on, we've begun disagreeing about a lot of things. And from my perspective, because of changes from what we agreed upon in the original contract, but to be fair, in the way I acted may have given her a different idea to what I'd said. Nonetheless, I'm really struggling with it because I felt we were on the same page when we signed the contract. But she says that people change and the contract was open to renegotiation, which is true. The question is, or rather the concern is, that because of her hormonal changes, she may quite likely change again. So how do I find any stability in that? How can I trust the other things that we've agreed upon? That's what I'm having a really hard time with. See, people's word and honouring their agreements is the most important thing to me when it comes to any relationship. And I'm fine with people changing because you can't help your emotions. But when you're having a baby with someone, you can't just say, "Well, we changed," and step away. I don't know. I perhaps shouldn't expect her emotions to stay the same or her ability to control them. Or judge her so negatively when they don't. I met up with an old friend this week that I hadn't seen in a while. Our friendship had kind of been put on hold because They needed some space. So I was really glad that we were able to reconnect again and chat. And it reminded me of how insightful a person they were in my life. How after hearing about my life for just a few minutes, they were able so clearly and uncompromisingly to figure out where I was and what I needed to do to regain some sense of mental stability. One thing they suggested was to own my decisions and then move on, not complain about them. Otherwise, it's like someone who offers to help you move, then spends half the time complaining about it. We only met for about half an hour, but when I left, I felt at least half as unsettled as when I first got there. Good friends are priceless. So, Eri and I have been trying to come up with names for Froggy, and it's hard because we're hyphenating our last names, so it's finding something that works with an already quite wordy ending. I met a super interesting person on a flight this week whose middle name was Morgan, but Eri didn't like that. My grandmother's name was Verena, but Japanese people have trouble pronouncing V's and R's, so that wouldn't be good for Eri's parents either. Eri does have a baby name app on her phone, and I've been looking up names online, but if you have any suggestions, let me know. Eri kind of wants something to have meaning too and be somewhat uncommon. And if you have comments about the show too, and whether I should continue to do it, drop us a line, myunconventionallife2016@gmail.com. Would it really bother you if this stopped? I'm a bit mental, I know. Anyway, well, back to my interview with Les.
It's funny, you know, I've heard my contemporaries, my peers over the years would say, wow, you know, I saw this female and such, and she, you know, red hair, this or that, and boy, he was one of, you know, and I met her, I finally was introduced to her, she's really nice and this and that, and then a few months later, well, we've had sex and she's just a bitch, right? Wait a minute, what changed, right?
Yeah,
because you were a conqueror. Something changed, right?
Yeah.
You know, and that was, now, there's something I always was curious about, right? It was okay for you and I to go out on the hunt.
Yeah.
But all of a sudden that made these females bad people.
Yes.
Why is that?
Yeah, double standard, a huge double standard that's been there arguably since agricultural time began.
Yeah.
I mean, I read a book called Sex at Dawn. It's about the agricultural, the history, the sexual history of human beings, and how originally we were nomadic tribes that roamed around from one thing where everything was shared within the village, sex included. Monogamy was almost unheard of. And then what happened is once we settled down and we started owning land and pooling food resources, then we had stuff to control. So essentially what happened was that once we had things to own, like land and resources, we had to develop this notion of monogamy because we wanted our kids to keep those resources, if that makes sense. And it's been going on for, 2,000, 3,000 years now. And there's always been this sort of dichotomy, this double standard for women,
sure,
to where they were told, okay, women are chaste and women don't have the same sexual desires that men do, but we need to restrain them and stop them going out there and being with anybody else, which is contradictory, right?
Right.
You know? But I'm hoping, it seems like now, we're finally getting to a stage where women are allowed to be themselves sexually, getting closer to it. I mean, not everywhere in the world, and certainly not everywhere in America, but towards the coast, now it's far more acceptable.
Well, you know, my mother played basketball, right?
Right.
Which, I think the girls' game back then, they wore these, you know, these god-awful looking gym costumes and uniforms or whatever. But they were allowed to dribble the ball like twice or three times, and then they had to pass. But it was a limiting game, right?
Yeah.
And when I mentioned about the race cars with me earlier, I remember it was a family thing. You know, my dad was a good mechanic. I was a guy with a good reflexes, so I got to drive. Mom would always fix lunches. She loved going to the drag strip with us,
and
she would keep times of the cars that were running against us, so we, you know, could see what. But I remember her saying to me on a couple times, gosh, I wish I were younger. I'd like to get out there, you know. So in a way, my mother was sort of a rebel.
Yeah.
Right? She played basketball. She wanted to drive a drag car. Right. You know. And also, when I was a teenager, you're not old enough to remember by any stretch of the imagination, but, you know, rock and roll was the devil's music, right?
Yeah.
And women would get pregnant from rock and roll. I mean, it was just, you know, you look back at it and it was so absurd. But
yeah.
My mother liked Fats Domino and she liked some of the rock and roll music, right? And she, and I'm thinking, wow, I've got the coolest mother in the face of the earth. But I think in terms of my being progressive at anything,
yeah,
it comes more from my mother because my dad was more of whatever the times were, right? He was more quiet and less outgoing, and she was more aggressive, I guess, and creative.
Right, yeah. I don't know. I mean, some people go, oh, the world's such a terrible place now, and we're all going to hell in a handbasket.
Yes, your point.
But I think, and I want your opinion on this, I think the world is tending towards a better, kinder place. I don't think things like, and perhaps this is technology, I don't know, I don't think things like the Holocaust could happen in such a grand scale now in the westernized world. Of course, it is happening as we speak in other portions of the world,
sure.
You know, and listen, my experience of that is very limited. And of course, my experience of the world is only what I see as well. You know, as it stands now, I don't really have a whole lot of experience in terms of non-monogamy whatsoever, but it's, I guess what I'm trying to say is I feel like little by little we're tending towards a situation where human beings are happier, kinder to each other.
Well, you know, the crazy thing is in this country, I am so, so fed up with all the political posturing, whining, backbiting. It's, you know, and in sports as well, right?
Right.
I'm not averse to anyone protesting anything, but I don't know. I can remember as a child, like the political thing, somebody is wearing an Estes Asbestos button. That was Estes Kefauver, who was running against I Like Ike, Dwight Eisenhower, right? And you could stand, those two people, each wearing their individual buttons, could stand and have a discussion about this without threatening to kill one another or
right.
to burn my home or to never speak to you again, right? Of course, coming from a more naive, a more simple time, right? As I said, happy days, you know, American graffiti time.
Yeah,
the complexity, I think, today has created, well, from what I understand, the smarter your phone, the easier it is for me to hack you or to find out what you're doing or where you're at.
Right, there is that side of things.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean,
and you and I both know that with social media, there are these social media geniuses who absolutely know nothing about what we do and yet rip on us. I mean, verbally, a way they would never do it to your face or never, right? I mean, they become empowered simply because they have a computer or a smartphone, right?
Right, yeah. I mean, I think I can agree with you in terms of politics, but think about in the 70s, right, with Vietnam, when people were burning their draft card, et cetera, et cetera. That was an extremely difficult political time as well, right?
Well, you went to Kent State,
right,
where the National Guard killed
four kids.
Four kids. It was a mistake.
Sure.
But we didn't hang all the National Guardsmen in effigy. We didn't. That's part of it, too. Now it's, you know, again, I don't care what your political affiliation is. That's because I don't judge people on that anyway.
Yeah.
Because I think in the last election, the choices were little or none. Right. And I'm not sure which one won. But
yeah. So don't you think, this is my viewpoint on politics, is whether it's now or in the 60s, the 80s, 90s, whenever it was, I almost wash my hands of it. I almost feel as though it's red pill, blue pill. You know, you let them get on with it, and all you try and do is just to improve your little corner of the universe.
I think that probably as long as I've been alive, that, well, actually, I was alive before television, you know, which kind of dates me, right? But I think that probably all the networks had political affiliations forever. I mean, I'm sure, you know, but they were hidden agendas, right? Now, it's almost, you can turn a network on and realize this network is Democrat, this network is Republican, right. Which doesn't interest me in terms of the network.
Right.
Give me good programming, I'm going to watch your network. I don't care if it's the gay network, the black network, the sure. You know, whatever, right? If it's good programming, I want to see it. It just bothers me that these people who should be acting with a little aplomb and a little dignity in representing our country aren't.
Right. Yeah, we've got a few examples of that right now.
And it's and it's not just the one guy.
Yeah.
It's everybody,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah, that's a fair
and
point.
And this whole thing about the female being verbally raped or you know, it's this just didn't happen in the last 10 years. It's, like I said earlier, the casting couch or that type of thing has been going on forever and ever right. and ever.
So if politics is getting worse or it's always going to be the
or
same,
or just
cetera,
coming out, it's coming out in the open.
Yeah.
That's right. The worst part,
potentially,
I think.
Potentially, right.
Yeah.
Do you think, though, that in terms of women's sexuality, then perhaps they are improving? I mean, they have way more rights now than they certainly had when you were growing up.
Sure. I have no problem with a woman deciding who she's going to sleep with opposed to you and I deciding for her.
Yes.
Or saying that if you're going to marry her, that, oh, you mean I'm not your first man? Well, if you're over the age of 21, I would guess if you are,
right.
If I am your first man, maybe I should be questioning this relationship.
But what about saying, okay, maybe I'm not your last man as well? I mean,
well,
that's the question.
That, you know, of course, that comes down to the two of you
yeah.
to make a lot. That doesn't always work out either, does it? Because
and then that's okay, isn't it?
Well, I'm assuming that it is, yes.
Because you
sure.
just talked about that relationship when you were 41 and the girl was 22 years your junior.
Yeah.
And it didn't work out in terms of spending the rest of your life together, but it was a positive relationship. It
oh, yeah,
was,
yeah,
right.
sure.
So nothing wrong with that.
And I've had positive relationships that I wasn't married to.
Right. And you've had positive relationships that weren't monogamous as well, right?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So,
friends.
Yeah. So I think, I'm hoping that we get into a stage where monogamy is a choice, not the expectation.
I remember this was a woman that I wasn't dating in any way, shape, or form. I just knew her, right?
Yeah.
And a bunch of us had left a club one evening and gone to a late night restaurant, you know, for something to eat. And someone had mentioned to this, I can't remember her name, but I remember the comment because for the times, it was a little over the top, right?
Yeah.
But someone had said, oh, I guess you're dating Charlie. I don't remember the guy's name.
Yeah.
Dating him? No, I'm sleeping with him occasionally, but I'm not dating him, right? And everyone just kind of looked at her, right? But this would have been back in the 70s, right?
Uh-huh.
Which, that would have been a, wow,
yeah.
right? That would have been a shocking statement.
Right.
Today, and I know we're on a podcast where any language, you know, I tend not to get too vulgar in podcasts, but I understand that the word fuck
yeah.
today is like when I was a teenager saying hell or damn.
Yeah.
Right? But yet my generation, people from my generation, well, oh my God, you know, to me, it's, you know, does my 12-year-old grandson know what, I'm sure he does. He
yeah.
doesn't use it in front of me, and I would appreciate that he doesn't, right?
Right.
Because I'd like to think of him as a nice young man of 12, right? Or it's like with my granddaughter, who's now 16, I know a few years ago, I saw some of her posts on Facebook, and I thought, I'm not going to mention this to my wife. She'll have a heart attack, right? Because, but it's a faster world.
Yeah.
When you realize, you're going to think this is crazy when I say this now, but from my generation as a child, when we realized that our mothers and fathers had slept together, you know, to conceive us.
Yeah.
You were shocked by that at first, right? My mother and father had sex? Are you ribbing me? But you've got to realize too, Nigel, that I grew up in a movie about a married couple. They had twin beds.
Right.
They weren't in the same bed.
Yeah.
Never mind that they had sex, right? So the world has changed so
yeah.
dramatically. You know, I used to look at my mother, God rest her soul, and think, my God, all the automated things that have happened in your lifetime. Air conditioning in a car, in
yeah.
a house.
Yeah.
Are you kidding? Right? And then I look at my own life over 77 years and some change and think, my God. right? But the things that we're talking about now, you can't even conceive, right? You can't even fathom the fact there was no television. My God, Les, you must be 1,000 years old.
Yeah, it was interesting, isn't it? I mean, if I ever reach 77 years old, like, what changes will I have seen? Obviously, the internet is huge.
Sure. Well, there was computers. No internet when I, right?
Yeah.
Nothing.
Right. But I wonder whether we'll see those same sort of sweeping social changes as well, and whether it will come
to a
stage. Well,
don't you think that part of that, one is connected to the other, and maybe remotely, but still there is some connection between the social changes that are connected with electronics or
100%.
Whatever, right?
I mean, because it's all about how do these notions get passed on from one person to another. It used to be word of mouth, then newspapers, telephone, television, radio.
When I hear that so-and-so has left his wife, or this woman has left her husband for somebody they met on the internet, and I'm thinking, really? I mean, I'm thinking, as old and beat up as I am, I could put your picture on a dating site and say, hey, this is Les Thatcher, right?
Right.
And until they actually see me, they have no clue.
Yeah. But arguably, that's been going on for a long time before the internet. You can meet someone in a bar and they can put a different idea. Yes, they can't change their face.
I can tell you, I'm a movie director and all that sort of stuff.
Right, exactly. I mean, human beings have been duplicitous as long as they've been human beings, perhaps.
Right.
You know what I mean? And that speaks perhaps to how gullible or how hopeful and idealistic we are, perhaps.
Yes.
Especially
let me ask you a question, and maybe it's something you haven't thought a lot about, but I'm sure it's crossed your mind. You're about to be a father. What hopes do you have for your child?
This is interesting you ask me that, because we watched a movie the other day called The Christmas Prince, and it is a movie that's on Netflix, and it's aimed for sort of 11 to 13 year old girls. It's very sort of obvious about falling in love and
most Christmas
the rest of your
movies
life
are
together.
My the wife runs me over the top with Christmas movies every year.
So I watched it, and you know, before I knew I was going to be a dad, I watched it and gone, okay, it's kind of an unrealistic expectation to hope everybody falls in love and spends their rest of their life with one person. But it was kind of vague notion. And I watched it this time and I was like, wow, my daughter is going to see all of this and get ingrained with this notion that if she doesn't find Prince Charming and spend her life with this person, somehow her life's going to be a failure or disappointing to her. So what I want to provide my daughter is the ability to know there are other options in terms of loving people.
Right. You know, but now you don't want to smarten her up too soon.
Right.
Because, you know what, the one thing that I think a lot of the young people miss today that I thank God I didn't miss was my naive childhood.
Yeah.
When I could be a child, you know. Now these children, I mean, with the internet and all the social media, I mean, my 12-year-old grandson has a phone that's smarter than I am, for Christ's sake, right?
Right.
If we're talking about necessities, then a huge portion of all the modern-day things can be done away with because they're not necessary, right?
Yeah, I mean,
They're conveniences.
Right, and I wouldn't say to her when she's 5 years old, just so you know, monogamy doesn't work.
Right.
That'd be crazy,
well,
right? Yeah.
At five, she wouldn't even know what the word meant. Well, right. she could Google it, right?
There you go. I don't know. Is there a meaning to all this? Can we ever truly get to a stage of peace? I think so. I know I was there before. I just need to adapt and get back to it. I'll see you next week. Probably. That's another week gone. What have I learnt? And what peace have I found? Cheers for taking the time to listen to the podcast. Drop me a line at myunconventionallife2016@gmail.com if you have comments or questions. And if you like the show and know someone else who might get something out of it, tell a friend. I will be back next week with a week's worth of thoughts and emotions and hopefully some joy. But until then, wherever you are, whoever you're with, try to be kind to others, but as much to yourself. We're all fighting our own battle. Lead with love.
hell.